Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, I chat with Pedro Pascal and other actors from the movie Freaky Tales, then a musician who uses his food and music to encourage others to take up space, and a painter talks about being featured in the exhibition Chitty Figures. This episode is about being seen. That's all coming up. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. Have you seen the movie Freaky Tales yet? It opened in theaters this past weekend, and I really liked the movie. It pays homage to what makes Oakland and the city's residents special. The movie features big names like Pedro Pascal, Jay Ellis, Ben Mendelsohn, and Dominique Thorne. The fun, gritty sci-fi action flick takes place mostly in Oakland in 1987. There's this green electric energy in Oakland's air, and it makes people do some strange things. The movie is an anthology of four separate stories inspired by real-life events. All of the stories have one common theme. The main characters are underdogs. There's a new female rap duo wanting to blow up, a punk community bullied by Nazis, Warriors legend Sleepy Floyd playing against the Lakers, and a hitman trying to change his life. So let's go back a few weeks ago to the movie's big premiere at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland. I got to talk to actors from the film on the red carpet.
Actually, the carpet was black. I was in line right in front of the Grand Lake Theater with dozens of reporters. The sky was gray, but the Hollywood stars were out. The first actors I interviewed played punk rockers. Hi, tell me your name.
Hi, my name is Jiyoung Yoo.
And you was kicking butt.
Thank you. Oh my God, thank you.
You were kicking butt. I loved it. I love the spikes. I love the edge. I love the courage. How much fun was it playing that character?
It was so much fun. It was scary because she's so cool, and I don't really feel I'm that cool very often, but it was so much fun, and it's always a good day at work when you get to kick some ass.
You must be cool, though, because it came out of you really, really well. Are you just a really, really good actor?
Thank you. I mean, either of those compliments works for me, so I'll take both.
What's your favorite part or just favorite thing about this film? Because I love, like, it's sci-fi, it has a deep message to it, it's fun, it's dark.
That's a good question. I think sometimes there is, like, a bit of a narrative in film that we should only stick to one thing in a movie. There can only be a couple ideas. And what I like about this movie is that they kind of just throw that rule out the window and are like, what if we have every single idea we can think of? Let's put it all in, and you end up with this really incredible bonanza that feels like you're watching four movies in one.
Part of the film takes place in Gilman, a renowned punk venue in Berkeley. Hi, what's your name?
My name is Jack Champion.
And who do you play in the film?
I play a punk rocker named Lucid.
The Oakland punk scene doesn't get talked about a lot when you look at Oakland history. So what did you learn about the Oakland punk scene, Oakland punk culture?
I mean, I had, like, no idea how crazy the punk scene was in Oakland. Like, Green Day started in Gilman. And, like, I don't know, there's definitely so much history there, and I was not aware of it. But right before I started filming, I watched this documentary about the Gilman and the punks at Gilman. And, I mean, the stories they told, crazy, genuinely crazy.
And that punk chapter in the movie was crazy. The second chapter of the film is about the Oakland female rap duo Danger Zone. Singer Normani plays rapper Entice. I speak with the actress who portrays rapper Barbie. Now, I know your name, but I just want to hear you say it.
My name is Dominique Thorne.
I was so happy when I saw that you were going to be in this film, because you're such a great actress. And I learned that you can rap.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It was a lot of fun. Absolutely a lot of fun.
How was it working with Normani?
Fabulous. We love her. Tens across the board. I'm so proud of her. This is her acting debut, and she did such a phenomenal job. I can't wait for folks to see her.
If you saw Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, Dominique Thorne plays the superhero Ironheart, and the head writer for the upcoming Ironheart series is Oakland's Shanaka Hodge. And you've worked with a lot of several Oakland creatives. So Chanaka Hodge, who's because Ironheart is coming out, and I will be watching because I'm a Marvel fan. Also to Ryan Coogler, yes, because you were in Wakanda Forever. So, and then working on Freaky Tales, what have you learned about Oakland as far as just working with Oakland artists?
Oh man, I mean, you definitely grow up hearing about Oakland's influence, not only in the arts, but also in activism. And so I think to get to lean into people who are truly Oakland down has been such a treat, because it's matching the history and the stories that you've heard growing up with actual lived experience, and seeing how that creativity just seeps out of and sort of comes through naturally. Also paired with a truly deep understanding of the cultural impact that that creativity and that artistry will have, which I think has been true for the folks that I've been able to work with. So it's been a real, real treat to see how those two can mix.
In the second chapter, we meet a villain, a very racist cop. And his portrayal is a tad campy, but it works in the film.
My name is Ben Mendelsohn.
And you're such a fabulous actor. You don't play a very nice person.
Well, no, that's true. I don't play a very nice person, but it's a dirty job. Someone's got to do it.
No. Yeah, you got to tap into something to play something body like
that. Yeah, you got to go there, but it's, you know, like wrestling, you know, old-fashioned wrestling, you know, like WWE when you've been that guy, and it's Hulk Hogan being that guy and whatever, you know. Like, yeah, anyway, I don't want to,
We won't go there, because we're having fun tonight. We're having fun tonight. last question. I'm from Oakland. What did you learn about Oakland, being a part of this project?
You know, there's a vibe here. Like, there's an earthiness in Oakland, you know. But you look at Too Short, right? Like, he's gone for, like, 40-odd years, you know. And you walk around with him, he's accessible. Everyone respects him. I just think it's such a powerhouse of a place. You know, it's connected to the ground. People's feet are on the ground. And I come from a place like that, not, you know, in some ways, you know. And I respect that a lot.
And speaking of Too Short, I see the Bay Area rapper who portrays him in the film. Hello, Simba.
How you doing?
Good, how are you? You smiling. You got a lot to smile about.
I'm happy. We here, we home. Uncle Short being honored, the Bay Area being honored, the culture being honored, so I'm happy.
Yeah, you played Uncle Short. What was that like, playing an iconic legend in the Bay? And I'm from East Oakland, so I remember that Too Short from back in the day.
So as a young man that always was trying to charm the ladies, I got to show how a lot of my game and mannerisms came from Too Short, right? So for me, it was being able to show our Bay, you know, the Bay Area, that Bayism, that Baydestrian in me, showing that player side of us and what we come from. So I loved it. Great film.
You got him down to the posture, to the then y'all had his teeth like how he used to have it.
I had to study that because I had to represent where we come from. I didn't want to get up there and everybody be like, Simba's too tall to be playing Too Short. You know what I mean? So I had to make sure.
Because you was crouched in.
Yeah, I had to make sure I stepped into that role.
Is this your first movie?
Yes, first film. First film and not the last.
I was about to say, you got the acting bug, huh?
Yeah. Okay, that's why I've been slacking on dropping music, but we back in April.
Now, of course, there were Bay Area celebs who rolled through just to show their support. And I see an Oakland rapper that I've interviewed a few times on Zoom, and this is our first time meeting in person. Is that Jay Walt? Can you talk for a second? Okay, what brought you out here?
Hey, what brought me out here, you know, a couple things. First of all, this is Oakland, California, you know what I'm saying? So I'm born and raised out of here, so it's only right to be out here. I got family in this film. My brother Simba over here. One of my best friends, Angus Cloud, was in this film, you know what I'm saying? It feels different right now being able to, it's going to be the last time I get to see him on the film. My brother Martin's in the film, you know what I'm saying? So it's only right for me to come out here, especially representing Oakland and also just a hip-hop artist out here, you know what I'm saying? It's only right to hold it down for the city.
And, of course, the original bad girl of comedy made an appearance on the red carpet, too. Miss Lunell, how are you? My name is Janae Darden. I've interviewed you before. Yeah, it's good to see you. Lunell, if I was hanging on the cliff and I was screaming for my mama,
And if you did an Instagram live, she'd be like, hold on, I gotta watch you next.
Good for mama. I'm quite entertaining.
It's so happy. It's so great to see you here. I know like you're in Las Vegas and you tour a lot. What does this mean for Oakland to have a film like this?
First of all, it's great to have something good to celebrate about Oakland with all the bad news that happens about Oakland. It's not the Oakland I grew up in. And my daughter right over there, she's in the movie. I'm not in it, but she's in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
What does she play?
Oh, well, Danielle.
Hi, I'm Janae Dart with KLW. So who are you? Because I just saw the movie. Who do you play?
I'm one of the dancers on the bus. So I'm in the dance scene. I'm one of the dancers throughout the movie and towards like the ending, which I'm excited to see how it all turns out.
It looked good. I saw the video. It looked really, really good. Yes. Well, congratulations.
I'm excited to work with Normani as well. It was so fun creating this movie. It's been a long time, but yes, it's finally here. So I'm excited to see the finished product.
How it feels seeing your baby in the movie?
I'm excited. I'll probably scream.
Now we're getting into chapters 3 and 4 of Freaky Tales. And during the whole movie, there's reference to the 1987 Warriors-Lakers playoff game where Sleepy Floyd scored an astounding 51 points. In the movie, he's portrayed as a nice guy with superpowers. Just don't make him mad. Sleepy Floyd?
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm great, great.
When you heard about this film and how you would be represented, because Jay Ellis plays you, were you like, what in the?
I was like, what? Jay Ellis playing me in a movie? A movie is based around my character in a game in 1987. I was so excited. They asked me, do you want to be a part of this? I'm like, are y'all kidding me? You don't have to ask that question. I want to be a part of it in any kind of way I can help support it. It's been an amazing ride for me. I'm just enjoying the ride. I'm very blessed.
But in the movie, you're not, you know, Jay Ellis portrays just somebody not only who's bad on the court, bad, like, like we don't want to mess with you, like, yeah. You know.
He made me look a lot cooler than I actually am. You know, I wish I was that ferocious, but not in real life.
But, you know, it's the nice ones that you got to watch out for.
Well, that's true. That's true. You don't get us mad. Once you get us mad, we go across that line, there's no turning back. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, don't put that out there.
No, but Jay did an amazing job, the whole cast and crew. I think Oakland's going to be very proud of the movie. It's entertaining. It tells a little story behind it, kind of what Oakland was going through at the time.
Yes.
Some of the challenges and being able to come through it all is amazing, so.
Well, I enjoyed the film, and thank you so much for your time, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. And speaking of actor Jay Ellis, who plays an action hero version of Sleepy Floyd.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Did you enjoy beating people up? Because you was whooping folks.
You know I did. Come on.
I know
hit
you did.
With the 1-2.
2 whole hours later, it's starting to drizzle. Pedro Pascal rolls up to the black carpet. People are shocked, even his castmates. I'm at the very end of the line of journalists, along with other audio reporters. And the film is about to start. I only have one shot to get his attention. I think of the theme of the movie.
Pedro, we're the underdogs. We're on the end.
Oh, yeah? You're the very end of the line.
Yeah, so we go with the film.
Yeah. Save the best for last.
That's right, that's right.
Pedro Pascal plays a hitman with regrets.
Real quick question. Your character was so conflicted. What did you learn about redemption in playing that character?
Forgiveness. Forgiveness at the end of the day. And that means like forgiving yourself first and then finding your path from there. If you want to keep on living, you know.
When asked what he learned about Oakland and its vibe, Pedro responds.
This is the raddest city in California. Its vibe is chill as fuck.
And there you have it. Freaky Tales is currently playing in theaters. Make sure to check out last week's interview with filmmakers Ryan Fleck, who's from the East Bay, and Anna Bolden. They'll explain more about the inspiration behind the film. So you can listen to that show and any episodes you missed on KLW's Sights and Sounds page. And coming up, an artist who expresses what it means for him to be Chinese American through music and food. But first, my KALW colleagues have something important to tell you about our membership drive.
That's right. We're inside of our spring fun drive, and we ask for you to stand with KALW. 800-525-9917 or at klw.org, and stand up for the station that's bringing you media like no other. Isn't that right, Angie?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And you know, the nice thing is that if you're listening, you know that. You know how special we are. You also know the times we are living in. You understand that it's time you need to stand up for public radio. Public radio needs your help. We are your public radio. We are your community radio station. This is the time we need you to stand up. And if you have not considered us in a while, if perhaps your membership has lapsed, you can re-up to stand up. We need you. 800-525-9917 is our phone number. You can only spend about 2 minutes there and get all of it done. We'll take your name. We'll talk to you about possible thank you gifts, and you'll be on your way. You can go to klw.org and do it all by your lonesome. klw.org, fill in the same information, check out our thank you gifts, which we mean heartily, thank you, and you'll be on your way.
800-525-9917. And this is KLW at 91.7 FM and online at klw.org. And yes, we are continuing our fun drive here, second day. And yes, that was a little message. And go ahead and check us out at klw.org or at 800-525-9917.
You know, I don't know if you've been keeping up with everything KLW has been doing to expand. There has been so much community activity at 220 Montgomery. It is time for you to check us out on that whole different level. We have radio, we have podcasts, we have a training program, and now we have live and locally centered events. 220 Montgomery in San Francisco. All of that information is at KALW.org, but the best thing you can do there right now is to become a member. If you can, double your membership. This is the time that we need you to be here to the greatest extent you can. If you're giving us 25 a month, thank you. We'd love to see you make it 35, 40, 55 a month. If you haven't joined yet, this is the time. 800-KALW-917 or KALW.org.
That's right. And there's so many things that the station is doing. And it's amazing that we are able to train voices of the community. The Audio Academy has just really produced some amazing people. And they've gone off to do some amazing work via NPR, our PRX. And we got a lot of success stories, Angie, and it's just amazing. I mean, of course, you're a radio veteran. Okay.
Been on radio since before God was born. And I'll tell you, you know what's honest about that? I can tell you honestly, this is the station that I like the best because we mean so much to the community. We're not pretending to be some international power. We're not pretending to be, we don't go around eating up stations. What we do is to bring you the best in community radio. We really need you to get behind that right now because public radio is under fire. Please stand up. 800-KALW-917 or KALW.org. Whatever you can do, we appreciate.
That's right. 800-525-9917. And we now go back to Sights and Sounds.
Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darton. On Thursday, KALW is hosting the California Migration Museum launch and listening party. The California Migration Museum is called a museum without walls. They have self-guiding audio tours that take you through neighborhoods in San Francisco while giving immigration history of that area. Now, you can join the museum's party tomorrow night at our 220 Montgomery venue in downtown San Francisco. Musician Alex Wong will be performing, and he is an artist, producer, and activist. And that song you heard that you heard just now playing is by him. Alex was nominated for a Latin Grammy, and much of his work addresses the complexities of being Chinese American. And I'm so happy he's here. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, glad you're here. I mean, just the work you're doing is just so interesting. As I was learning so much about you, how did you come into music?
Oh, man, I can't remember not being in music, but it's been a very long, circuitous path, as I bet any artist that you probably interview has their own, circuitous path to talk about. But I think I knew for a long time that I was attracted to music at a super young age, but I didn't quite know what path in music, you know, for a long time. And I think it takes a lot of experimentation and trial and error to figure out, and a lot of growing personally to figure out what it is, you know, that I really wanted to express within music. So, you know, I started out in classical music, mm-hmm. and I wanted to be in orchestras, and I went to school for classical percussion, and I, you know, I've been a producer for a long time, but it really took me, I think I was kind of a late bloomer in coming to that I wanted to tell my own stories, and it took me a long time to feel permission to do that.
And, you know, you mentioned just some of the different types of genres of music that you do, and I usually don't ask this question to artists, but I would like for you to describe your music, because the music I listen to is classical that you've done, rock, a little country. You were nominated for a Latin Grammy. So how would you describe your music, your sound?
Wow. Well, I have gone, I've tried all kinds of different ways. I think, some kind of cinematic folk music is the best way I can describe it. You know, I really like to create sonic worlds, with sounds mm-hmm. and instruments and arrangements. But I think the core of my writing and storytelling comes from, the folk world, I guess, just sort of as direct and stories that I feel need to be told.
And you said cinematic folk. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that is what I said.
Yeah. No. I was just taking that in, because I can, like we were saying, describing it and what you like to create. I was like, I can hear that in your music when I'm listening to it. You have a song called Second Generation, and I was so moved by the story behind it. But first, let's hear a little bit of the song.
Remember the sound, brothers gathered around, they were speaking the mother tongue. I remember your clothes, orange and gold, incandescent glow of a mother's love. I remember the taste in my mouth, all the questions and doubts when you went away. But the shape of the words, forgotten and blurred, now they're too hard to say. I don't speak the language, I can't read the signs, I can't hear the voices that whisper inside.
So that's just a snippet of Second Generation. Alex, tell us what inspired that song and break down the meaning.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. Funny enough, the song was written, was inspired by a story that wasn't originally my story at first. I got asked to be part of a show in New York that this wonderful organization called Keepsake House put on, and it was called From Story to Song. And what they did was they paired musicians with poets and authors, and the poet or the author would write a piece, and we were to kind of react to that piece and write a song about how we reacted to it. And I got paired with this great poet named David Glover. And he wrote this really heart-wrenching poem about his mother, who was schizophrenic, and how he, as a child, always wished he could know her better and kind of know her mind better, and always felt like there was a barrier there. And at first I was just like, okay, I'm super intimidated by the, this concept. How do I find my way into this? But as I sort of thought about it more, I related to that concept in my own way, culturally speaking, from, you know, people in my family and loved ones and those in my community who I always wished I could know better. And because I was, you know, I grew up kind of assimilating to American culture and grew up speaking English, there was always sort of a barrier there. You know, I wasn't fluent in Cantonese, and I always felt like there was a block, and it was something that I carried a lot of, you know, guilt and shame around. And that was sort of, you know, that resonated with me in a way of like anybody who's ever felt a block or a barrier with a loved one, whether that be cultural, language, ideological, that was who I was writing this song for. So, you know, I did draw from some of my experiences and actually some of the poem, but the emotion I was trying to get at was sort of that feeling of, you know, there's something inside of you or something inside of another person that you want to connect to, and there's something in the way.
Wow. Yeah. When I read about that, I thought that was really, just really beautiful and powerful. And, something else that you're doing as far as, you know, just even making us think about these different issues, and, something that you've gifted yourself is permission, and you're on your permission tour. You're making stops this week in San Francisco, Berkeley, Danville, Saratoga, and there's not just music, but food. And it's about giving yourself permission. You know, some of us in, you know, like people of color, immigrants, people who, you know, maybe have disabilities. Sometimes we're not encouraged to take up space. And I understand that you started this permission tour to help you feel more comfortable taking up space and giving other people, you know, encouragement to take up space. So can you talk about that? And the fact that you cook too and bring community together, I just thought that was just such a great idea.
Oh, thank you. I'd love to talk about it. And I resonated with something that I heard before the segment that somebody said about, you know, someone asking, like, what do we do now in these wild times? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it sort of sometimes can feel like nobody is listening to protests and nobody's listening to sort of the channels that we were taught are the correct ways to make change. And you know, something that's happened for me through this and other community work is just this real doubling down of you know, really the micro communities and get, you know, turning the intention into what can I do in my immediate surrounding community? How can I make that better? How can I, you know, enable that community to have power? It has really been inspiring to me, and it kind of, I see that really dovetailing with this current project. So yeah, the record, Permission, that's the title of the record, and it's sort of in the process of coming out right now. We're releasing singles. I think the next single is going to come out in May.
Okay. Is that the Spaces Between? That's the song we played coming in.
Yeah, that'll be out in, I don't think it's the next one, but it's one of them. It'll be out in a couple months. And yeah, I think that the record was the first time I gave myself permission to look at some of these, to really like unpack some of these issues and questions that I've been feeling regarding identity and some of the lessons that I had, you know, conditioning and lessons that I had kind of internalized over the years of making myself smaller, ceding space to, you know, white people in a room. And, you know, what parts of those were things that I didn't need anymore, you know, and how can I, you know, I remember I've been in music for a pretty long time in the industry, and I remember early on that there was a manager who literally said to me, like, don't write about Asian stuff because it's not relatable. It's wow. Not marketable. It won't be, you know, the mainstream audience won't get it. So, you know, there was this, I remember Just feeling like I turned my lens away from those, that part of me, for years, decades, because it just wasn't really on the table. And when I finally started to say, hey, you know, why is that? Why am I not writing songs? Why am I not telling that part of my story? I didn't have a good answer. And so I started to dive deeper into it. And this album is what came out. And and I think the intention of writing it is to empower anybody who hears it, especially those on the margins, to know that their stories are worthwhile of taking up space. And the more specific they are, I think, is the more are the more resonate, you know, the they have the more potential of resonating with people who really need to hear those stories be told and see that being represented.
Well, I think people are going to be in for a treat when they come and hear you play tomorrow. And also, too, I know just this event about migration, and I'm just even thinking about some of your personal story. You seem like you're the perfect person to be performing for something like this. So I really encourage people to come out. Alex, I wish I could talk to you longer because I had questions about Nashville and all kind of other stuff. You're from the Bay,
I know,
right?
I talk too much. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I like to talk. That's why I got this job.
So you have. I do. I hope people can come and experience the food and music pairing. You know, it's something I really, it's something I'm using to tell these stories by combining the emotional narratives of the food and the music together.
Well, okay. Well, folks, go out, hear some good music, learn something, get a plate, all that good stuff. Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Make sure to check out Alex Wong tomorrow, Thursday. He'll be performing during the California Migration Museum launch and listening party. And that'll be at KALW's downtown San Francisco venue at 220 Montgomery. And you can go online to klw.org/events for more info. And coming up, mysterious but insightful, colorful yet deep. These are a few words that I use to describe artwork by Chris Lux. I'll be chatting with him next. But before that, I'm going to pass the mic to my KALW colleagues for our membership drive.
That's right. And it's, we're inside of Sights and Sounds. And Janae Darden is definitely just bringing a lot of the talents to our radio airwaves. We so appreciate that. Sights and Sounds is what you're listening to now here on KALW. And we are inside of our fund drive. So stand with KALW at 800-525-9917 or at kalw.org. And one of the things that we've been showcasing this month, Angie, is Bay Poets.
Yeah.
So we've been really showcasing a lot of people who are in the arts and who are doing poetry. I have a great admiration for people who do poetry, who are able to be wordsmiths and things like that, because I don't have that talent.
I was going to say, that's one of those things that you realize how hard it is when you sit down to do it. It's like, oh, there are pros in this, and I ain't one of them.
Yeah. No, I'll go on the microphone for another thing, and it's the talk about KALW. So stay with us at 800-525-9917 or at kalw.org.
It is so important to have your support right now. And actually, one of our listeners said it best. KALW is hot soup in cold times. Well, does that really nail it? We are trying to be exactly that to you. These are cold times. We all need to kind of snuggle together right now and share that body heat. 800-525-9917 is the number to use to give us our support, renew your support, and if you can, double your support to support a public radio station that is your community and cares. We're only answerable to you. We're not answerable to any industries. We're not answerable to any corporations. We're only answerable to you. And we hope from what you say to us that we're doing it right. We need you to stand up for us now. KALW.org or 800-525-9917.
That's right. Double down on that $10. And go ahead and put another $10 on that monthly donation that you bring to us here at KALW. Or $20 that you have. Why don't you go ahead and put another $20 down on that? And you think about it. If you put a little bit into it, it's going to be a lot to come back. So just think of it as a tax return, okay? And you realize when you're listening to the airwaves, what you're going to give, what's being reciprocated to you. Shows like Sights and Sounds, Your Legal Rights, which is coming on later this evening at 6. You have One Way Possible. You have Lady Ryan. Those are the programs that are made possible by you. 800-525-9917.
You know, if I remember hearing correctly, KLW was the first station in the country that nailed down that blend of music and news. Yeah. And, man, it has come back. It is on fire. We want you to listen to our evening. The evening music is amazing.
Yes, it is.
If you already appreciate that, or if you know you're going to check it out and be pleased, because that's what we do, you can call us now, 800-525-9917, or give us your support at klw.org.
1-800-525-9917, klw.org. And, of course, we do have our KLW app, so folks like to be on the phone. You can go ahead and get on the phone and download that KLW app from your app store and check us out and let us know how we're doing. Give us that progress report while you're donating to your local public radio station, 800-525-9917. We now go back to Sights and Sounds with Janae Darden.
Hey, welcome back to the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. Chitty Figures is one of the latest exhibitions on display at the Berggruen Gallery in San Francisco. Artist Barry McGee, who has been on Sights and Sounds, is the curator, so shout out to him. Chitty Figures is a contemporary look at Bay Area figuration in tumultuous times, according to their website. That's what it's about. And one of the artists featured in this exhibition is Chris Lux. Chris is an alum of the San Francisco Art Institute, and he's based in LA now. And Chris paints on large scale canvases, and his work is colorful, mysterious, layered. His pieces definitely caught my eye when I checked out some of the pieces there. So I'm so happy to talk to him. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Janae.
Hey, good to see you.
Yeah, thanks.
So, Chris, now were you part of the Mission School back in the 90s?
So I was the youngest little kid of that kind of group. So I know all of those people, and I was just like this little 14-year-old running around at everyone's feet, hanging out, going to art shows, hanging out on the street and doing stuff. Barry used to pick me up from high school. Like, I went to Soda, and he would pick me up from high school with Margaret, and we would go do stuff like, you know, go do graffiti after school and go find stuff on the street. So I'm friends with all those people. I consider myself an honorary member, if not an original member.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay, because you and I are kind of close in age, so I was wondering, because I was like, I know you'd be kind of on the younger end. And for people, who don't know, the Mission School was a group of young San Francisco artists inspired by the urban culture of the Mission, and they just really made some incredible works. They're the cool kids. I guess I would see it. So if I was like young, hanging out with them, then I would definitely be impressed. So how did they, like, being around all those artists, how did they inspire you as an artist, especially at that age?
Yeah, I mean, it was super inspiring at that age. I mean, even from a younger age, like, I went to school in the city. I grew up in the city. And I remember I took classes with Ruth Asawa when I was a kid at Rooftop. So she was, like, this really cool artist teacher, like, founder that we had there. She was really good friends with our principal there. So that was a really cool thing. So just from an early age. And then I went to middle school in the Mission. So I was just like really young in the Mission, just seeing all the murals. And that was so inspiring. And just the urban life and all the people on the street and, you know, just everything that's so inspiring there. I took classes at the Mission Cultural Center, and all of those things were just like really informed the way that I worked.
You know, Chris, when I was looking at some of your pieces, and they make me want to jump into the paintings. And so even hearing about you growing up in the Mission or going to school in the Mission, I can see that influence in your work. But if I could, I would jump into one of your paintings and wander, like just wander through them, because there's so many dimensions and layers to your work. Like when you're painting, do you know beforehand what you're going to paint, or does it come to you? Because like I said, you have to look really closely at your pieces, because there's so many, you'll see like the big images, and it's not all your pieces, but just, you know, I'll see like these big, large images, and I'll see things going on in the background, and just, and the way you even collage and you paint is really beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's strange. Sometimes I worry that I'm like, oh God, I'm making like five paintings in one painting. I should probably try to simplify.
But yeah, but I like painting. That though. That works. To me, it works.
Yeah, thanks. I think, yeah, just, I mean, you know, like that, it's that kind of look of the murals and the mission that was so inspiring to me. And then also like the kind of like, you know, frescoes in Italy and stuff that were like really kind of set up for people who, you know, couldn't read. They could still like learn stories from reading with their eyes and having their eyes kind of move through the painting. And mm-hmm. so that kind of pre-literary way of working has been a big influence on me too.
Interesting. So, you know, going back to, you mentioned murals. Is there like, I'm not a muralist, as people know, I could barely draw a stick figure. But when you're creating murals, is there any specific setting that you like when you're creating a mural, or like what's the ideal place for you to make a mural?
I've done a lot of murals outdoors, and it's a very different process. You have to use different paint and everything like that. It really is just a kind of the whole vibe, like what the, you know, what building it's on and everything like that. Like you really kind of end up, they kind of end up being more collaborative too. Sometimes you're working with commissioned murals. Like sometimes you're doing murals where it's just like free for all, you know, somebody contacts you and you just go. And other times people come to you and they have an idea. They say, oh, I saw this mural, I'd really love to do something like that. So I like the ones where I get to just go off. The ones that I enjoy the most.
And your work is featured in the Bergruen Gallery. And the name of this exhibit is Chitty Figures. I'm really being careful saying this.
Yeah. I think originally it was supposed to be an S in there somewhere.
Yeah, I was like, it rhymes with, we know what it rhymes with. So, again, Barry McGee curated the show. So why that title? Do you know why?
I mean, I definitely think he's also somebody who is a student of the Bay Area figurative movement. You know, he's a lot younger than obviously like a lot of the artists that were upstairs, like, and the famous B artists and, you know, people like Joan Brown and David Park. So there's always been this kind of Bay Area figurative thing. So I think it's a play on that kind of Bay Area figurative work. That being said, Barry's work uses figures. I use figures. All my figures are actually from figure drawing sessions, which I used to go to figure drawing class at the Mission Cultural Center. So a lot of the sketches I have from that get brought out and transformed into some of the works that you saw.
And I really like the piece, your piece on display, Three in the Swamp. And it has these different shades, and people can go online and look at it. It has different shades of greens and browns, and you see people intertwine. And again, you got to look close. And it looks like they're laying down. What is the inspiration behind? I was like, I never want to lay down in a swamp till I saw your piece. I was like, that actually looks nice. Never would have thought of that. Which says how good of an artist you are, Chris, that I'm contemplating laying down a swamp. But what is the inspiration behind the piece? And like, does it reflect the theme of the show?
A lot of it, like I say, comes from doing figure drawings from live models. Mm-hmm. So those are all figure drawings that then get recut, put together into those compositions. And then the swamp-like colors just kind of came through that. The kind of atmosphere in the piece is actually done from spray paint, like kind of like a wash over the top of it. And then there's parts that are taped off so that it kind of flows throughout the whole piece with this different kind of misty, swamp-like mist that kind of hangs over it.
And why a swamp? Because when we think of swamps, like I said, you made a swamp look really beautiful. And definitely there is a beauty, you know, to a swamp, especially when you think of the ecosystem. But why the swamp? I just thought that was interesting.
I think for that piece in particular, I wasn't starting off like with a direct idea to engage with the ideas of swamps or they have, you know, swamps have an amazing history. That wasn't necessarily where it came from, but it kind of like leads you there. So originally it came from these figure drawings and the colors and the space. And then kind of afterwards, when you step back, you start to kind of put it together. And the title came after the work was finished, and you just kind of look back and you're like, wow, this has really created this wild atmosphere place. I like to create work that kind of leads the viewer somewhere, allows them somewhere to think. You kind of hand it off at a certain point. I'm not necessarily there to to guide them to a certain final understanding of the work.
Yeah. And look, even though I'm asking you questions to understand, so hopefully you let us let me cheat, Chris, but you know, sure. you mentioned that your pieces, sometimes you're like, oh no, there's five paintings in one piece, and actually that's what drew me to your pieces when I saw the layers of your work. And I was wondering, and I was like, and I was, as I'm looking at the layers and I'm thinking about just life and just as we as people, and I'm like, you know, do the layers of your work speak to the kind of person that you are, or just all of us, that, you know, there's more than what we see when we see each other and in life. Like, there's just so many different layers to people and to our environments and to ourselves.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think with painting, you know, it's such a an interesting medium that engages in this, like, really deep historical narrative of, like, I mean, you know, there's, to make a painting now is almost like looking backwards, and there's this direct line of the entire past, and the history of painting is a very, like, interesting place. So that's kind of like where I start from, is like looking towards the past, looking at other paintings, looking at kind of like all of these different layers of art specifically from the past, and trying to kind of like find my own way as a painter with that, trying to find my own voice and images, and while still like really trying to understand the influences that have really, you know, that have really meant so much to me over the years.
And so I also read about you that, and you kind of touched upon this, how history informs much of your work. And when are you looking at like history of art? Are you looking at, you know, stories, just moments in history? And is there a specific era that really inspires you in history when you create?
I think it's the idea mostly of this kind of this past that is inherently unknowable. And you see these like paintings of the past that, you know, that to just think of like what the artist was like and think of what the world was like in those moments. And you'll just never know, really. And you can read about all of these different things, but you'll never be able to kind of experience it. And sometimes looking at older paintings is like the closest that I think you can get to like understanding what the past was like. So that's kind of like the idea of history. I've worked from just places that seem really far away. Like I did this book a while ago that was illustrated the lives of saints, which are very strange stories. Mm-hmm. And just the kind of like the ideas of like how strange they are and how weird those stories can be of these different saints just felt so far away from our daily life now that is something that I just felt myself really pulled into and tried to learn more about and explore. So things that feel far away.
Yeah, interesting. And yeah, and I think Alex Wong mentioned that, just as far as like, I think that was Alex, about how, you know, storytelling and even I think through work just informs and teaches us so much, you know.
Yeah.
So there's another exhibit of we're talking about history. So there's like within the gallery, there's an exhibition of historic Bay Area artists like David Park. And I was thought it was interesting that we have these, you know, current artists, you know, younger artists, and then these older artists. What does that mean for you, especially someone who likes history and that inspires a lot of your work? What does that mean for you to have like artists of different generations, kind of like, you know, in the same gallery at the same time, to have these different generations of Bay Area artists?
Totally. I mean, I think there's a direct lineage. I mean, you have Bergeron Gallery has shown so many different people. I mean, you have Aretha Sawasho at SF MoMA across the street. Mm-hmm. And then you have these works from the Bay Area figurative movement, from the beat era, all of these different things upstairs. And then you have the person who's just a little bit older than me, Barry McGee, curating the show downstairs with, and then there's even people in there who are younger than I am in the show. So it's a real kind of lineage, I think, to Bay Area artists. And I think between the gallery and between the show that's curated, it's just this really cool, it was a really cool experience to see it all in one place.
Yeah, no, it's really, really cool. And again, like, I really, I need to actually go see it in person, because I have seen a lot of the images online. But especially, like I said, I want to see your work up close too as well. Do you have any other shows coming up in the Bay? I know you're in LA, but I know you still got connections here. Anything else you got coming up?
Yeah, I'm going to do a show at the end of June at this gallery called House of Seiko. It's in the Mission. That's going to be pretty cool. It's just a couple blocks from where I went to middle school. So it's a little bit of a coming home for me. So I'm excited about that. That opens June 28th at House of Seiko, like the watch.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay. So we'll have to keep our eyes open for that. And you have to come back again, Chris, anytime.
Yeah. Awesome. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, nice talking to you too. Thank you so much. All right. Yeah. I've been speaking with artist Chris Lux. And the exhibition, I got to be careful how I say this, Chitty Figures, runs until April 24th at the Bergeron Gallery in San Francisco. I'm going to get Barry McGee for that. All right. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, board operator Damien Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. And by the way, if you see a bunch of women walking around San Francisco wearing royal blue and gold, those are my sorority sisters, the lovely ladies of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated, are in town for our Western Region Conference. So be nice to them, and shout out to my sorors. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. And until then, be good to yourselves and each other, and be good to your community by contributing to KALW. And my colleague Angie will tell you more.
Always pleased to do that. Ask me to open my mouth, and here I am. And here I am in a very good cause. You know what's going on right now. You listen to the news. You know there are people who are trying to back public radio into a corner. And you know what? There are too many of us. There are too many, even if you just consider the KLW listenership.
That's right.
That, you know what? They can't do it to all of us. We want you to stand up for us right now. There's a lot to be done. We are doing it. We are bringing you superb programming. We're developing more superb programming. We're responding to the moment. And we want you to do the same. 800-525-9917 is your 2 or 3 minute phone call to become a member of KALW. Or you can go to website, kalw.org. Do it your way, but please do it.
That's right, 800-525-9917. That's right, kalw.org. Or clicking on that donate button right there. And it only takes a couple of ticks. That's it. Just a couple of ticks. And get involved. Get involved with what we're doing here at Local Public Radio. And like you said, Angie, as public radio is kind of backed in a corner. We're going to be pushing back on that.
Absolutely.
So get in our corner and stand with us, because we're standing for something. We're standing for some rights. We're standing for rights of voices of the community. We're standing for rights of the ones who need a voice. This is what we're here for.
Absolutely. Give us a call, 800-525-9917 or kalw.org. Hey, I want to give a big shout out to those of you who have already been with us, and especially those of you who have been with us through the years. Thank you so much for that. I ask you to please consider the amount that you are giving monthly to KALW. Give it a good hard look. Can I spare another $5? Can I spare another $10? Can I take my $25 a month gift and make it $50? If you are in a position to do that, believe me, there is no time like the present. No. We're bringing you everything that you hear on KLW, and we're bringing you more, because we always bring you more. 800-525-9917 or KLW.org. It's time for you to let the world know that you stand with community radio.
That's right. We are community, and we are on the radio, and it's only possible because of you. 800-525-9917. And again, we are an extension to each other here at this institution. We are an extension to each other, and that's what it's all about. We cannot do it. If there's one person that's missing from that, it's not going to be the same. So we have to continue to push forward, continue to spread the love, spread the word about shows like Sights and Sounds, about shows like Your Legal Rights. spread the word. Spread the word about the Audio Academy that we have here at KLW, 800-525-9917, or at klw.org.
You can hear the flavor of KLW. You can hear that it is not just community-influenced, it is community-infused. Yeah. We are part of the community. You can hear it coming out the radio dial. You know, there's a really, there's kind of a cliched NPR sound. This is not to diss them. NPR is a grand institution, but there's kind of this is NPR. Well, hey, you know what? You just heard Janae Darden. Shouldn't sound like that.
No.
That is an authentic voice from the KALW community. We pride ourselves on that. We go out to the communities and find new voices and train them to bring you their life in the community. And we know you value that or you wouldn't be listening. So please look hard at what you can afford to give us in a difficult time and step up. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
You know, you mentioned how Janae has her sound.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing because she represents a plethora of people who sound, who have that same similar voice. So it's good to know. It's like, okay, that's me. I can recognize that. She sounds like me or she looks like me. He looks like me. They look like me. And it's beautiful just to see that and just to have that, because that definitely gives you that inspiration and that motivation, because you can be that shy person and that voice right there, you found it by hearing what's going on here at KLW, what you heard on Sights and Sounds, what you hear on Your Legal Rights, what you hear at nights, what we hear with Indeed with Angie Cuero, and it's all happening right here. But it's only possible by you. 800-525-9917.
So if you can relate, if you are perhaps the world's palest person, an Italian peasant-bodied woman, well, by golly, you are represented right here by me. No matter what you look like, no matter who you are, we want you on board. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. We're having a lot of fun in a very serious moment. So let's not lose sight of that. We want you on board. 800-525-9917. This is KALW San Francisco.